I did.
Yes, and you were out there and got a job as a laborer, and there wasn't enough work. And one of the first guys to get fired, that was during the barracks expedition.
Oh.
You personally came over and told him that he was through and out of town?
That must have been in 1957.
Probably about then. Well, I told him that if you fired him, that he must have had a pretty good reason, that he was probably one of the best candidates for firing.
Well, that's kind of peculiar. The expedition was always delayed that year, so we got some people up from Fairbanks, and they never could get where the barges were unloading. You know, they'd be here or weathered in or gone or something. So we had some excess, and a lot of them just stayed around. They got paid. Mm. We're doing nothing.
Well, knowing Chuck, he would elaborate a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, because he knew that I was married to you, and he said that you...
Nothing against them, you know.
No.
They're just there.
Well, as I told him, he probably didn't know him from the next laborer down the beach. He just accessed him. But anyway, I wanted to...
Is that thing going now?
No, it's not going yet. If it didn't cost $2,300, I'd have to go out and take a sledgehammer to it every once in a while.
Hmm. It cost that much?
Yeah, it sure as hell did.
Couldn't you get a smaller one?
Oh, yeah, but it wouldn't have the quality. But this one might.
How can you tell when it's working?
Let's see. That is... I don't even know what mic that is. Okay, where was I a little bit ago before I was rudely interrupted by your coffee making? I was asking you, I was interviewing you. I'll mark that all off. Okay. Anything that you don't like, I'll erase. Anyway.
Should I start at the beginning? With all I can remember.
Start at the beginning when you were born. Time zero. Mrs. McInerney, whose picture is on the front page of the paper tonight, you know Lee McInerney?
Yeah.
She's lived in Alaska all of her life, but she wasn't born here.
Mm-hmm.
Like you, she wasn't born here.
Mm-hmm.
But she says, I wasn't born here, but I was conceived in Fort Lipscomb.
Oh, yeah.
Across the bay from Valdez.
Yeah.
Her father is Saul Urey, who was up here with the Signal Corps.
Oh, yeah.
And she's lived in Seward and Valdez and, you know, that area all of her life. So if you can start before earlier than that, go ahead. No, just, what were we were talking about your brother.
Oh, yes.
What brother? Jack Dalton.
Jack, yeah, Jr.
Jack Jr., and where'd he show up on the scene, as far as you were concerned?
I think he was born about 1891 or 92 or thereabouts.
Really?
Yeah.
He was?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Is that right? Where was he born?
I think in Haines, but although I don't know. But... getting back.
Before his birth?
Oh, no. I mean, my father's really the subject of discussion, and I'm trying to think of his early life and his progenitors. He claimed to have been born in Michigan. His family came from Ireland, Ontario. There's hundreds of them now. And his father... went from Ontario to Michigan, along with the mothers of his family, and worked in the iron mines, Ishpeming. Ishpeming.
Is that a profession or
no,
a town?
No, that's a town.
Oh, it's a town.
Ishpeming.
Ishpeming. Okay.
They had iron and copper and whatnot there.
Go ahead. I'm just fixing myself a cup of coffee. Okay. No, mine. So, I live here.
From there.
Well, I live here.
So, from there.
From Michigan.
Where he was born.
Your father was born there?
Yes.
When? What year?
Oh, I guess about 1858 or thereabouts.
He died in when, 45?
Yes.
And he was what, 86?
89, I think.
89? Holy yeah. Christ.
Well, anyhow, from there they
think
moved.
He lived that long?
I don't know. They moved to Kansas. And that's where he grew up in Kansas. And he left home when he was about 15 or 16 for good.
Did he get kicked out?
No, but he didn't get along with his father.
Amazing.
And he never went back home until after I was born. By that time, his father had died and his mother was still alive. He went back about 1915 or 16.
To where? Kansas?
Yes.
Whereabouts? Mm-hmm. You remember the town?
Salinas.
Salinas, Kansas?
Yeah. And, when he first left home, I think his first experience away from home, he worked on the railroads. You know, the transcontinental railroads were being built across the prairies. And then from there he went to Central America, to Mexico and Central America.
Habla Español?
Yes. He must have a little. But he never went to school in his life beyond the second grade because
he
there
didn't.
Weren't any schools.
Is that right?
Yes. And so he taught himself to read and
to
write.
To read and write?
Yeah.
How did he do that?
Well, I don't know. He did.
I mean,
a lot of people
help.
Did. Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Then, let's see. I'm trying to think. The next place that he spoke about after having gone to Mexico and having gone to Central America was being in Arizona, in Yuma. And while in Arizona, he worked for George W. Young, who was Brigham's son. And what he was doing was driving those 16 mule teams from someplace to someplace, I don't know where.
He worked for George Young?
George W. Young.
George W. Young. And
yeah.
This is...
And he was driving mule teams.
Approximately what year?
Oh, that must have been 1878 or 79 or thereabouts. And from there, the next place I know that he was in Eastern Oregon. And in Eastern Oregon, he worked for Hank Vaughn. And what he was doing for him was breaking horses, wild horses. And Hank Vaughn was a well-known man and became famous, but he was erratic. And after he took a liking to the old man, and the old man used to drive his stagecoach. And periodically, they used to go to Walla Walla, which was in a fort, had soldiers stationed there. So Hank Vaughn would, there was a, among other places, there was a big dance hall there with two stories.
Mm-hmm.
The balcony, and Hank Vaughn used to get roaring drunk, and he'd go up there, the balcony, and throw chairs down at the soldiers.
shocking.
And told them if they wanted to fight, why?
Come up.
Come up. And then they used to go home, and they used to pay the troops in coins. And you'd have a whole bag of money.
You mean the army troops? Or
no,
his,
no, his own
employees?
His own people, his own employees. And he, as he progressed toward home, and he got drunker, he'd rip open the sacks and throw all the money loose in the stagecoach, and tell my father to drive rapidly because he'd like to hear that money rattle around in the stagecoach.
God, I wish you were living in Fairbanks today. We could have a good time.
So then he later, what he got in that trouble and
what trouble?
Oh.
Who, Vaughn?
No, my father. When he got in trouble in Eastern Oregon, he had been working for Hank Vaughn, and he branched out and had a logging.
Red who?
He had a logging contract to get some logs out of the woods.
Vaughn did.
No, my father did.
Oh.
And
somebody got his way and shot him.
No.
No.
Man, that was the blacksmith that was working for him. Went into the saloon to eat lunch, and a bunch of the local hands were shooting at his feet, you know. And
at the blacksmith?
Yeah. So he had a little trouble getting them out of there, and a confrontation and so forth. And they told my father they wanted to see him out of town that night. They didn't want to see him back ever.
Start over now and again. He was working for, still working for.
No, Vaughn. No. He had finished working for Hank Vaughn, and he was doing something on his own.
Oh, he was logging. Okay.
Yes.
And he would say that again.
And his, one of the people that was helping him was a blacksmith, and the blacksmith went into the saloon to have lunch, and while he was there, some of the local toughs were giving him a hard time and shooting at his feet. So my father got him out of the saloon, and in the course of doing that, why...
He shot one or
no,
two.
No.
He didn't?
No. They told him they wanted to be out, him to be gone that night, but they didn't want to ever see him again, so that kind of rankled him a little bit, and so he came back.
What town was that?
I think it was Prineville. Which I don't know about or never seen. But he came back and he confronted this head bully or whatever you want to call him, and he said that he had a 30-30 carbine in his hand, and that man just was going to shoot him, and he shot him first. So then he had to get the hell out of there because he was outnumbered. He was all alone, and all the other people were standing by, and they all took out after him. So he headed for Hank Vaughn's house, and he barely made it. You know, he had to cross the creek, and the creek was overgrown with
was
brush and
a,
trees, and
a
horse. Yeah,
or
yes.
A wagon?
A horse, a horse, yeah. And so he got in amongst the trees, and he was dodging bullets right along there for quite a while, and then it got dark, and they said they didn't venture in after
him. How come you never told me this story before?
You never asked me.
So. Oh, I do too. But no. You've been hiding it all. No. Well, go ahead. It's
so
getting
then,
exciting.
So then he went to Hank Vaughn's place, and Hank Vaughn took him in.
He was his former employee.
Yes, and friend. And a deputation of these people from the town came out looking for him in Hank Vaughn's place. They knew he was there. And he and Hank Vaughn confronted these people. He was armed with a shotgun, and Hank Vaughn was suitably armed, and they wanted him to be handed over, and they said no. So... they went away.
The posse or the,
yeah,
the group
yeah,
went
yeah,
away.
Yeah, yeah. And Then from there he went to Puget Sound, Seattle, and he worked a while there, you know, and logging. And then he left for Alaska. He got a sailing ship out of Port Townsend.
Out of Port Townsend?
Port Townsend, which was about the equivalent of Seattle in those days.
And where was he headed?
Well,
for
No, he came to Alaska. Yeah, I think that was a sailing ship. And he made a voyage on that lasted for a couple of years. It went from...
Well, he went to Herschel Island or something.
Yeah, but that was later. That was later.
Oh, it was?
Mm-hmm. And in the course of the trip, they were gone over a year. And they went all the way to down the Aleutian chain and even to Siberia. And they were, after fur seal, they were hunting fur seal, which they shouldn't have been doing, and they were caught out of Sitka by the, whoever was a law enforcement agency in those days, the Navy.
Well,
or
that
the
was the United States owned Alaska.
Yeah, day. Right, yeah, yeah. And
this was one in the... Late 80s? Early 80s? Or
about 1883 or 82 or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their voyage was complete. They had all the furs, you know, mm-hmm. and they were...
Hot to trot
yeah,
for the big
yeah,
city.
Yeah, but the ship was confiscated and all the cargo was confiscated and they put them all in jail in Sitka.
In Sitka?
Mm-hmm. And that ought to be a matter of record, too. And then the captain committed suicide. The captain owned the ship, and the rest of the hunters were on shares. But after he committed suicide, then they let the rest of them loose. And that's how he happened to stay in that area.
In Sitka.
Yeah, yeah. And while there, he mentioned later a man, a sea captain by the name of Carroll. That I've heard about him later, too. He offered to buy Alaska for $10 million.
Well, did your father ever mention marrying a half-breed Indian? Or?
No, no.
Well, by the time you were born, you were the product of the third or fourth wife or so.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever it is. Someday I'll look it all up.
Well, my mother, they were mining in Porcupine Creek out of Haines. Porcupine Trading Company was the name of the outfit. That
Who was your mother? Or
no,
my
your father and Hanley and Maloney. Maloney was
Maloney, that's a guy.
The judge.
Yeah, and his son lives in Juneau right now.
Oh, is that right?
And
yeah.
He's got, that's what he was,
yeah.
He has the records of the Porcupine operation.
Oh, yeah.
Maloney,
the
guy in Juneau.
Well, they had
you and I, in January, I want you to go with me when the governor gets inaugurated down there, if you can get away from Barrow, and just to go down and see Maloney.
Maloney's father, who was my father's partner, was an attorney.
And
he was
Maloney,
a state senator from Montana.
And Maloney now in Juneau is an attorney.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyhow...
and Maloney Jr., now in Juneau,
right
1974... has the records of all that stuff from Porcupine Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Which is...
Well, as I was saying, they had a successful mining operation. It was difficult. And every now and then they mined on the glacier stream and they used to get flooded out. So it was profitable. And after one flooding out, after about the second or third time, they decided to sell it. So they sold it to some New York outfit. And the president of this company from New York came out to conclude the purchase of it, and some of his staff came, amongst whom was my mother. And that's how they met.
What was she doing with the staff? Was she a secretary?
She was a secretary, yeah.
Hmm. How romantic.
Yeah.
Had she ever been west?
No. Mm-hmm. So.
So, tell me all about that little romance. That big romance.
Well, I hear it.
Was he still married to his other wife at the time?
Nobody hadn't been. The matter of the divorce hadn't been cleared up, you know, and they had quite a job getting married in the church.
What church?
The Catholic Church. So when they were going to marry, in the meantime, they had to get married.
Because you were in the way.
Yeah. So they found somebody that would do it. A priest.
You mean you're illegitimate?
Yeah. But I didn't know. Nobody ever told me, and I figured it out for myself.
You're not so damn dumb, are you? Keep going. The story's getting better. Where was this now, in Haines?
No, in Cordova.
Oh, Cordova.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that is the reason. I've been trying to get your a passport for you, and nobody wants to record your birth.
No, they were married when I was born.
Yeah, but the marriage certificate, or the birth certificate.
Yeah, the priest were dragging their feet. There were some of them that were against it. But my father was a good friend of Bishop Cremant.
That's the reason nobody has it on record, you know. Your sister is born, and it's recorded in Cordova.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I've been...
I imagine Cremant had a hand in...
Cremant?
Oh, he was a priest, a bishop of Alaska for many years.
What was his first name?
I don't know. It was spelled C-R-I-M-O-N-T. He was a Jesuit priest and the bishop of Alaska.
Father... Excuse me, Bishop?
Cremant.
Bishop?
C-R-I-M-O-N-T.
No wonder the Catholic Church doesn't have any record of your birth, dearie.
Yeah. Denote? Well, by that time,
not in Cordova.
They were married when I was...
Not in Cordova or not in in Seattle?
Well, I was born in Seattle.
I know. They have the baby Dalton.
Yeah, I know.
But there's no record of your, you know, when you were baptized. Well, now I have a little clue. I'll go back and I'll say Bishop Cremant.
Well, I suspect that because they were friends. They had been for a number of years.
Who, your father
and
he?
Cremant, yeah.
Well, where was Cremant?
He was all over Alaska.
In Cordova? Was where was
he
headquartered?
He was Bishop of Alaska.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It must have been in Juneau or Southeastern.
Yeah. But he was in the interior for years, Cremant was.
He made you legitimate.
Yeah.
With God. You suppose when you die, you'll be up there at the gates to welcome you in?
Amen.
Maybe we could go down to the church and light some candles. And
he died a long time ago.
Oh, I expect he did.
Yeah. I remember him coming in and visiting us in Yakima when I was 15 years old or so, or 12 years old, or 10 or something.
God, your father must have been something.
Well, he was young and energetic, and some of the traveling that they did with the major, you know.
I know.
Just like those miners that climb Mount McKinley, the dingbats now, they
fly up to the 10,000 foot level and then walk them.
Yeah, but they started out from Nenana, and I think all they had for provisions was a couple of bags of donuts or something.
Well, you know, have you read Wickersham's thing on climbing to McKinley? People think Wickersham climbed up the top of McKinley. Wickersham did not climb to the top of McKinley. Mm-hmm. In his book, he talks about it. He spends about two chapters on it.
Mm-hmm.
They started out in, I forget now if they were in Rampart or Tanana, or Fairbanks. I guess they were in Fairbanks. Yeah, they're in Fairbanks. Went down the Tanana to Nenana, and then up the where's the Kantishna come in? Up the Nenana River?
They went down the Tanana to the mouth of the Kantishna.
And that's down from, between...
It's between Nenana and Manly Hot Springs, about
sort
halfway.
Sort of near Minto or someplace. Well, anyway, it's down there towards Manly.
Yes.
It went down to the mouth of the Cantish, and they had these two stubborn old mules. They took those mules all the way up, almost as far as they went. To tree line. But they never did get the top of McKinley. Well, I can't imagine. They took 2 months doing what they did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, those miners just made some kind of an agreement in the saloon at Nenana, and away they went the next day and by dog team. And they were successful in climbing.
I could see in the wintertime with dog teams they would be more successful because the way Wickersham describes it in his book, they... You know, they had these two mules. One was named Hannah, and they named a glacier after her, or him, or it. And I forget the other one. I'd have to get that book. Have you ever, you never read that book on Wickersham?
No.
It's a, you know, it's kind of like a diary, yes. And it's really pretty interesting. He's good on details. And, but anyway, they went up that Kantishna River and met the Indian tribes and they went up to the old Indian hunting grounds. It's really descriptive. But they had these two goddamn mules with them all the time. They talk about, you know, they're running out of fuel for the people, and they'd go out and shoot two or three caribou, and then the mules were in better shape when they got back than when they left because they had such good grazing. But they were gone for over 2 months, a little over 2 months, and when they returned, he and his clerk at court or somebody went down to Rampart, which was a big city at that time. Anyway, back to you. You were born in 1913, you think.
Well, no.
How do you know?
Well, 30th of January, 1913.
That was 31st of January.
30th.
30th of January, 1913. In Seattle.
Yeah, matter of record.
Yeah, I know. It says, I've got your birth certificate. It says, Baby Dalton, son of James, or John something or other. And I have that. But in order to get a passport, you can't be Baby Dalton. You have to be James William Dalton. So I called Cordova. And I wrote to the diocese, Catholic diocese in Seattle, and they had no record of your baptism. So I called Cordova, the Catholic church down there, and nobody answered. Finally, one Sunday, I called, and somebody answered, and it was a priest from Anchorage. And he was just rushing to catch an airplane, but he did take about 5 minutes to go back through the old records while I waited on the phone. He could find Josephine Dalton, born in 1916, baptized, but no James. So I don't know what to do on that. I guess I'll have to find out what schools you went. What schools did you go to in Seattle when you were a child?
St. Joseph's Parochial School.
And I wrote to them for something, and they said they didn't have any record of it. But you weren't baptized there, so St. Joseph's Parochial School on what street?
19th Avenue and 1 street down from Aloha. I forgot the name of the street.
19th Avenue, down 19th from Aloha.
Yeah, 1 block west of north or something.
Did you go to another school in Seattle?
No.
And then you went to Yakima? When?
19 or 20 or thereabouts.
So when you were about 6 or so?
7. I was in the first grade.
You went to Yakima in the first grade? Oh, I didn't know that. Well, you didn't attend school in Seattle then.
Yes, I did. First grade.
Oh, then you went to Yakima in first grade.
In second grade, I guess.
So what? What school do you remember?
St. Paul's Parochial School.
In Yakima?
Yes.
Well, I could right there then. See, I thought you were in Seattle.
No.
5 or 6 or 7 years when you were going to school, but you weren't. You were in Yakima. Well, you know, Les Dodson, you know, who's Jim Messer's partner down here, he needed a passport this early summer. It was early summer. He was going to England, London, England. And he didn't have a passport. He didn't have a birth certificate because his mother and father both were dead. And He never did have a registered birth certificate because he was born on a cattle ranch in eastern Washington. His birth was not recorded. When he, you know, was drafted and stuff like that during World War II, he had to have something. And so he got his mother and father, who were living, to sign an affidavit that he was so-and-so, and he was born on such-and-such a date in such-and-such a location. It's not recorded in Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the flood came here in 67, and he had these affidavits from his mother and father. Flood came, lost all of his documents. And so this year he wanted to go to... Well, he didn't want to go particularly. He said to hell with it, but his wife wanted to go, and he won a trip to London, England from GMC because he had sold so many vehicles. And they just had 30 or 40 guys around the United States who qualified, and he was one of them. And he was having one hell of a time trying to get a passport. Because he didn't have a birth certificate.
Yeah.
And he got Bill Boggess, his attorney, to help him out. And Boggess just did everything he could.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he called me, and I got working on it, through Senator Stevens' office. I've done this before for other people. If you don't have a birth certificate, you have to get something, an affidavit or something that shows that somebody who will affirm that you, in fact, were born and all this other stuff. And so we finally did.
Mm-hmm.
We got him a passport.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can do it when he had no record of his birth.
Yes.
Well, we could probably do it for you. I think we should. You should.
Yeah.
I think you ought to go to England one of these days.
Yeah.
Pardon me for yawning. It's not the company. It's just the hour. So anyway, you were in Yakima in the second grade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before that, how long did you live in Cordova?
Oh, about 4 years, I guess.
And what was your father doing in Cordova at that time?
Well, he had run a preliminary survey for the Copper River Railroad for Mike Heaney. And in the process of doing that, he acquired the port facility, the land on which the port facilities for the railroad were built.
He acquired it how? Just bought it, or?
No, mining basis and was mining claims.
Oh.
And then Heaney died soon. Before the river was completed. And
is Heaney the one that Rex Beach writes the book about?
It could be, although I don't speak of him by name.
But that book that Rex Beach writes,
yeah,
the iron,
must be, yeah.
What's he call it? The
Iron Trail.
Iron Trail, yeah. It's all fiction, of course.
Yes. But, you know, basically
the guy true. Dies.
Yeah, So then the... Of course, the railroad didn't want to pay him for it. They wanted to get it for nothing. So he had a heck of a job hanging on to it. They sent up people to run him off. And he never went around without a gun or two.
Do you remember any of that?
Just barely, just barely. And
the Guggenheims?
Yes.
Did they run him off?
No. They finally had to buy it. But it cost them a fortune in those days, you know, for lawyers' fees. To
cost the Guggenheims
no,
a fortune?
Well, of course it did, and it cost him, too.
Your father?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They indicated he figured on staying. We built a brick hotel right at the land that was under litigation.
Is it still there?
No, I don't think so.
Probably the first train that went through ran right through the hotel.
No. The trains were, I can remember the trains myself. I can remember among my first memories just sitting in the cab of the locomotive and pulling the
throttle.
No,
or
the bell.
Whistle.
The bell.
Oh, the bell.
Yeah. Because he had friends amongst the working people that worked on the railroad. In fact, some of them that were killed, he carried up their lawsuits and got them some money. They're
killed who? Accidentally?
They were, yeah, killed on the railroad. Oh. Yeah, so nobody, the railroad would have paid nothing. So he took that to court as long as he was litigation with them anyhow. He just included that in and got some money for the survivors. But the thing was in court for 4 or 5 years.
And that's, when they settled, did he come out ahead or did
yeah,
they
oh yeah, ahead? Yeah, he did. Maybe $100,000 or so ahead.
So how come when I married you were such a pauper? All you had was an automobile.
Yeah.
You should have parlayed that $100,000 into a hell of a lot of money. That was back.
But he never made any money after that.
He didn't?
Uh-uh. And it's one of the things I thought was pretty decent of him. He put me through school, where I could have worked my way through or something, but he paid that.
Well, did he pay your way up here at the University of Alaska?
No. I left on my own.
How come?
Well,
did you run out of money or did you just get tired of being kept? Or were you like George? You didn't want to leave home.
I was disappointed in love. So I left.
Oh, that must have been your first wife. When was
so
that?
So I woke up one morning with a hangover and I said, to hell with it, I'll going to leave, and I thought I'd go to Ecuador because I thought that was the most backward place in the world. So I hitchhiked to Seattle. They didn't have any money at all.
From Yakima?
From Pullman.
From Pullman. Didn't have any money.
No. Well, maybe $4 or $5. And I had some friends in Seattle. And I'd have to stow away on a ship going to Ecuador, but I couldn't find it.
Couldn't find it.
So I went looking around the waterfront and there I see the steamer Yukon.
When was this, 1935?
Yes. So I had to get the money for a steerage ticket, which cost $35. So I had to hitchhike back to Yakima and borrow that money.
From whom?
From a lady by the name of Kate McShane. She was a bookkeeper, real good woman. And I paid it back.
Well, did your father know you were doing this?
No, I was afraid to tell him.
Was he still in Yakima?
No. He was in, New Orleans or San Francisco or someplace.
What the hell was he doing there?
Well, my sister and she went to a different high school every year. Seattle 1 year, San Francisco another year, San Diego another year, New Orleans another year. So I didn't, when I got to Fairbanks and got a job, then I wrote to him. Told him that I thought I could make it on my own henceforth.
So how old were you then? 35?
No, 21, 22.
I mean, in 1935, you're 21 or 22.
This was in 22. About what George is now.
George is just 20. He just turned 20.
I know. But I worked all summer out of Gold Street. And I just went to town once all summer. And I saved $500.
Where'd you get paid an hour?
We got
35 cents an hour.
60 cents an hour. You work 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. which made it $180 a month. No overtime.
You lived in a bunkhouse?
Lived in a bunkhouse.
Right at Fox?
No, Gold Street.
Which is below Fox?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The bunkhouse is still there.
Mm. You came to town one time?
Yeah.
You walk?
No, Billy Root's bus.
Oh, Billy Root.
On the 4th of July. That was the one day off in the summer.
So what'd you all do? Go down to 2nd Avenue and get drunk? Or did you go climb the greased pole for 4th of July? Or?
That was the first year the co-op was open. The first time they ever had a ice cream and soda place in Fairbanks. And it was in a wooden building. On 2nd Avenue, I think. The first co-op was on the opposite side of the street to where it is now. And they had a wooden building where the present building is. And the soda fountain was right up next to 2nd Avenue.
You could sit there and look out at all the girls walking by.
Yeah.
Just the way you can the Flame Lounge now and some of those other places. Just watch all the hunches and the girls and the prostitutes and the old hags. City
matrons. The more, 2nd Avenue was more polite than it is now.
Not too polite today.
No.
So anyway, when you left, your father was in New Orleans with your sister?
Left where?
Pullman?
Pullman? Well, I went to school there for 3.5 years. Sure.
So, what did you go back? Your father go back to Yakima?
No, he never went back there. Sold that orchard in about 1929, just before the Depression.
So he was just kind of drifting around.
He
wasn't living in Eastern.
No, no. Mm-hmm. They just went wherever they wanted to.
Who was they? He and your sister?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you were kind of on your own then, mm-hmm. all those years. Well, where'd you go to high school?
I went to high school in Yakima, and then I went to my last year in Santa Clara.
Boarding school?
The preparatory school. Bellarmine College Preparatory, and it was used to be associated with the university, and then they split off.
So how about your father? After, in 35, he was in New Orleans. What did he do after that?
He just
go back to
around.
The West Coast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, where did he? Didn't he die in San Francisco?
Yes.
How'd you get back there?
Well, my sister lived there.
Oh.
After she was divorced, and they
lived with her.
Yeah, with her. Yeah.
Well, when was she married?
Oh, I guess it was about 1942.
And was she married in California?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So where'd she meet this guy she married?
In San Diego.
So this little thing I showed you today that I got, somebody had sent up to Bob DeArmond, you know,
mm-hmm,
about...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think...
this guy
it's
claiming...
Yeah.
The guy named Jack Miller, who changed his name later to Jack Dalton.
Yeah.
Does that sound very true?
I don't know. It sounds peculiar because I know his name was never Miller.
Well, you don't you think that he might have gone by an alias?
He could
possibly.
Could have, maybe to avoid trouble somewhere else. They didn't have Social Security and so forth in those days, and no way of tracing names like they do now.
Well, how did he get to? Let's see, you say he left home when he was 14.
Yeah, 15.
And then he went to, so when he died, he died when, 1945?
46? Yeah, 45.
And he was how old?
I think 88 or 89.
1945 minus 89 minus 90 would be 1856 he might have been born.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere in there, yeah.
And born in Michigan.
Yes.
So, let's see. By the time he got to Alaska, which would be 1882, you think?
Mm-hmm.
Or 83?
Mm-hmm.
Minus 56, he was 26 years old, probably, when he first came out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what about somewhere in DeArmond's articles or somebody, someplace I read where, excuse me, not DeArmond's articles, because he's never, I don't think he's done anything, he's collected mm-hmm. some bibliography,
yeah,
some biographical
yeah.
stuff, but he was up at Herschel Island.
Yeah, I think he went up there on the, furnished the pack trains for the boundary survey for the 141st parallel, the boundary between Canada and Alaska, and they went all the way to the Arctic.
For whom?
For the
Ogilvy?
Boundary? No, for the U.S. Joint Boundary Survey.
Well, Ogilvy was the one who surveyed that. He was a Canadian.
Yeah, but there was also American.
I know.
Yeah. The Joint Boundary Commission.
Well, you know, last year, 73, when I was over in Dawson?
Yeah.
I interviewed Margaret Ogilvy.
Yes.
I have her on tape. That's the granddaughter of William Ogilvy, who was the surveyor of the boundary.
Yes.
And then when the gold was struck in the Klondike in 96, he happened to be over in the Dawson area, and he was the only one of any, as you recall, reading your histories.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no historian, but I think I've read this. But he was, he was the Canadian official.
Oh, yeah.
Though he was only a surveyor.
Yes.
He was the Canadian official in that area. There weren't any Canadian, Royal Canadian Mounted Police or any, anybody of that in any authority. And he was just about the top authority of.
He had a reputation for being uncorruptible when others were.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, absolutely incorruptible. If he had been the least bit ambitious financially, he wouldn't even have had to be corruptible. He could have just gone out and staked, and he didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have to be bought or sold or anything else. He could have, right at the time, he could have gone above. He just happened to be right there in 96.
Mm-hmm.
When Carmax and Skookum Jim and who was that other dude with him?
Taggy Charlie.
Speaking of people with a lot of wives, old Carmax must have had quite a few wives, because he left, when we were in Carmax's summer, Carcross, with Kate Carmax's buried with Taggish, Jim and Skookum Charlie.
Yes. Skookum Jim and Taggish
Charlie. Well, I was close. Well, anyway, he had left. She was his squaw wife, and he'd gone back, apparently, from what I've read since.
Mm-hmm.
Went back to California to another wife, or
a
former wife, or something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about that?
No.
I don't either.
But she went out to Seattle with him, and she couldn't stand prosperity, I guess.
Well, that was right after the gold rush.
Yeah, right.
During it. You should have been here 2 weeks ago when we had our Chilkoot party. We had a good time.
Yeah, should have invited Skip Burns.
I did. I sent him an invitation.
Okay.
I did. I sent him an invitation. I also invited that phony Mike Gravel. What
George
are you looking
better
for?
Go. George better go.
Is he going after Libby?
Well, I guess so.
You know, Mike Gravel said that he climbed the Chilkoot this summer, and I think he's full of shit. Said he did it in 2 days. 2 days.
Hey,